Hello, you're listening to VHC, Vibes, History, and Culture, a show where we explore the unknown, the little-known facts and gems about music and popular culture from a millennial lens. This is your host, Kevin Washington. And in this episode is another All Things Music, and we are chatting with Faiga Harash, podcaster, a fellow podcaster and musician and public historian and music teacher, and who's amazing and has an amazing podcast called The D-Listers of History. And we get into so much more than that, including her musical background that includes great gems about the sacred harp music. But before we get into all of that, we're going to start out the conversation talking about an episode of Faiga's podcast, The D-Listers of History, on gospel great, the godmother of rock and roll, the late Sister Rosetta Thorpe. So let's get into it in another All Things Music on VHC. I checked out the Sister Rosetta Thorpe episode.
Oh, yeah.
What are the things about her career that stood out to you the most?
Gosh, it's been a while since we did that. Well, I love her performance style. Like, I wish we could see some of her older stuff from when she was younger. Because she's just... You watch these videos of her. Yeah. When she was older and kind of at the end of her career, and you see just how amazing her stage presence is. And it just makes me wonder, like, what was she like when she was younger and had more energy and wasn't like fighting diabetes, you know? Like, she must have been incredible. And I also just love that, like, I had no idea that she was basically the person who brought electric guitar into the mainstream, and she's basically established the way electric guitar is used. It's not when you think electric guitar, you don't think something like Sister Rosetta Thorpe, but it was her, she did it.
Yeah, because I remember reading accounts like Chuck Berry like credits her, and other rockers who came after really credit her for bringing that type of style into rock and roll.
Oh yeah, and a lot of like the European bands that got popular, like the Beatles and so forth, they all saw her perform when she went and did her European tour, and credit her with being a huge inspiration.
Yeah. And are you planning on doing more like little known folks in music?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have it scheduled yet, but I really want to do an episode on the Chevalier. Yeah, he was a contemporary of Mozart's.
Wow.
And he was a black composer that was a contemporary of Mozart's, and he's awesome. And they're doing an opera of his in Philadelphia. It was supposed to be this year, but it got pushed back for, I don't know, some reason. And I'm really excited for it to actually happen so I can see it.
As the conversation continues, we got a chance to talk more about the sacred harp music and other musical topics.
Yeah.
So Sacred Harp, or just shape note is usually what people say, is a, I've heard it referred to as like heavy metal hymn singing. So it came out of in New England around the like American Revolution time. People were concerned that young people were not singing in four-part harmony in church. This was like, you know, the major issue of the day. So they started singing schools, and there was a development of this concept of shape notes. And I lost my notes. I'm sorry. Oh my gosh.
Well, you did.
Here we go. I went to like write down the name of the person you said, and I lost my notes. Yeah. So, and over time it really grew into its own style. And today it is still sung religiously in some places, especially in the Deep South and mostly white churches, though there was a group called the Wiregrass Singers. I had it right. I should have trusted myself. The Wiregrass Singers, who had a totally different book, a totally different style of doing Sacred Harp. And I know some folks who sang with them back in the day. But it is, while people up north and like really anywhere that's not like central Alabama, people are mostly singing this as just a musical thing. It's fun for those of us who are busy. There's no performances. There's no rehearsals. You just come and sing. So that's really nice for people like me who don't always have time to commit to a musical group.
So is it like, because I'm listening to it, it seemed like it's like another form of folk music. Like,
yeah,
those traditions passed on from like Ireland and like the Celtic traditions and stuff like that. That's the kind of vibe that I get from it.
Oh, for sure. And it definitely grows out of like parish music in England. It's very different now than what they do, but it's certainly where it came out of. And the actual like tunes and so forth. So the music is predominantly religious, and that's just because that's who had the money to pay for these singing schools were the churches. So it's not there's actually a book of secular music that's done in Sacred Harp style. And I've sung like songs that were like from broadsides during the American Revolution that are about like sailing in the merchant marines. Like there's other stuff too, but it is predominantly religious. And but the tunes come from all sorts of sources. So there's, like you said, like sort of this Irish sort of Celtic thing. As this traveled south, there's a really old tradition in Appalachia of it's not Sacred Harp, it's a different book, but it's the same, it shapes, it's a very similar style of tone in the singing. It's referred to in the book as an unpretentious tone. that's like the Scots-Irish and so forth. So just, it picks stuff up as it goes through the United States, which then some people got a little freaked out about because, you know, people are always going to have that. And there's a big divide today, even in the shape note community, between those who like gospel and those who don't. Wow. So I am pro gospel. I love the books that include gospel. And there's other folks who are very like, it's this rift. It goes back to like the publishing of a book that has the same name, The Sacred Harp, but it's a different book. Oh. And there was a big like lawsuit between the two books. And since then, it's just been stress.
Wow.
It gets intense. And this is the thing I've actually found with this sort of like niche history topics. Mm-hmm. Is it gets like weirdly intense.
Wow.
Like, guys, we're fighting over who wrote an alto line. Like, calm down. Like...
Yeah.
people are very passionate about history because I'm pretty much a history nerd myself. And, you know, people interpret what they get out of it because I'm very passionate about disco, you know, because I have an episode from season one called Justice for Disco. And I'm very passionate about standing firm behind the genre, especially how marginalized it became and during that old disco sucks thing.
Actually, I don't know a ton about disco because my parents were fully in the disco sucks camp. But something I have learned is, as I have grown as a musician and as a historian, as just a human being, is to be very skeptical of anytime people just reject an entire genre out of hand. Like I have come to, when I hear someone say like, oh, I love all music except country and rap, what I'm hearing is a class difference that I'm hearing. And that also, if it's just rap, then it's usually racial, to be fair. But there's a, you know, it's that working class versus upper middle class music. And it's all wrapped up in that stuff. And so whenever I hear like, oh no, this whole genre, it's terrible, I'm skeptical of that. I have yet to find a genre that I can't find some like person, some musician in it that I don't enjoy.
Yeah, and for me growing up mostly R&B, hip hop and black gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really care too much for country, but grew to have a greater appreciation and find the nuances within it because there are black, amazing black country artists.
Oh, yeah.
On the line of Americana and folk. So.
Oh, absolutely. And just because, like, there's a lot of genres that I don't really listen to for fun, mostly, but it doesn't mean I can't listen to it and, like, respect it for what it is.
Yeah.
Vega also shares a little bit about her career as a musician and music teacher.
Just fell into music in the way a lot of kids do. Just, you know, elementary school band kind of thing. And to be perfectly honest, I think a lot of it was really social for me. I was not popular in school, and band was really that only place that I didn't have to like worry about just all the social nonsense. And when I went to college, I decided to major in music education. And I also majored in history. It was quite the decision. And part of it was because like I'd sort of been talked out of doing music performance. But I found that I really do love education. I don't love working in a public school classroom. I discovered teaching 25 kindergartners how to march to a steady beat is not what like lights me up.
Right.
But I love working with kids. I love working with not even just kids, like growing musicians.
Right. I like how you phrased that.
Yeah, like it's mostly been kids. But it doesn't have to be. I love working with people who are just still learning and still kind of honing their musicianship. And so now I'm doing mostly private lessons, which is its own sort of set of challenges and joys. But it's always great to see when kids like really, when they get something, it's always really exciting. When maybe I give them something that I think is maybe going to be a little too hard, and then they whip it out the next week. That's great.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about music as a form of, in educational systems, you know, how important, vitally important that is. And it seems like the school system is getting away from that. It has been for a long time. What are your feelings about that? I know how I feel about it. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, music has been found. I mean, I'm all for music's sake. However, also, it has been found that kids who study music are more likely to excel in other subjects. Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with just, you have to do so much at once when you're playing music. Like, I have a student right now who's young and a little chaotic. I love him to bits. He's a little chaotic. And that's part of what he's struggling with. I mean, he just started like 2 months ago, but remembering to do all of the things. He has to read the notes, read the rhythm, remember where his hands are supposed to go on the instrument, form his mouth in the way that makes it sound good. And he can do all of these things in a vacuum, but doing them all together is a bit of a challenge. And I think that's actually why his parents want him to study music, is because it teaches you how to do that. It teaches you how to multitask.
I think you mentioned that you also do other things on the side, like as a musician.
I'm not sure which ones you're thinking of.
I think you say you play the ukulele, if I'm saying
that. Oh, yeah. I got like roped into teaching ukulele classes.
Oh.
I don't really know what I'm doing. It's speaking of learning, it's an adventure. Because I'm very much a winds person. And so when they were like, oh, teach ukulele, I was like, okay. So that's an adventure. But mostly I sometimes sub in with an orchestra in New Jersey, and that's what it sounds like. You know, we play orchestral music. And I'm hoping to join a Mummers string band, but I don't know if that's in the cards this year. This is a very unique Philadelphia tradition. These guys that dress up in these like wild costumes, and they play string bands, which is like saxophone, banjo, accordion, and string bass, and percussion, obviously. And I've always wanted to do it. And I found a club that I feel good about joining. Some of the clubs are a little old-fashioned, and so I was like, I don't know if I want to be of that. But I found one that's not like that. But we'll see. We'll see if that works out this year or not. But it'll be fun if it does.
And as we wrap up our conversation, we get to talk about Vega's musical influences.
And I love asking my guests this. What is your favorite artist, and what type of genres of music influence you?
Oh, gosh. I really enjoy like musicals, like the sort of Broadway musical, especially ones that are like Stephen Sondheim, those sorts of things. Not as big a fan of like what's going on right now on Broadway for the most part. It's so expensive now to put on a Broadway show. So they'd rather put on another Lion King. Where they know they're going to make the money. But it's a little less exciting musically.
I guess I'm saying that, yeah. Yeah, like we could use more original material.
Yeah, like Hamilton, I think, was so popular in part because it was so different from things that had been on Broadway at that time. I feel goofy saying this, but honestly, it's really a lot of his musicals and classical music. That's what I listened to for a long time growing up. And so it's been such a like key part of my life. I love the like 20th century, like the weird composers like John Adams with his minimalism. And I've got a certain love in my heart for the serialists, like Schoenberg and so forth. I don't exactly listen to it when I'm like singing in the shower, but like I vibe with it. I like it. Contemporary artists. Gosh, I don't keep track of stuff that much. Lately, I've really gotten into this band called Charming Disaster.
Oh, okay.
They were on the podcast, but I got into them irregardless of that. And they're a folk, was it a folk goth duo?
Oh, okay.
Which is wild. They like sing songs about like carbon monoxide poisoning and stuff. Like it's very,
oh, wow.
Very weird. Yeah.
My goodness. I'm just, because I love
it. That was a very all over the place answer to what is actually a really simple question.
I love asking that question because I get like a sneak peek into different artists that folks like. And sometimes I ask someone who's into rock, but they might say a hip hop artist or a pop star influenced them in some type of way. So I love asking those type of questions.
Yeah. So. No, I tend to like find something that I get really excited about and listen to it and like into the ground, and then I find something else. So, you know, there was Hamilton for a little while, even though as a historian, I've got some thoughts, but musically it's fantastic. Okay. Not bad. It's not terrible historically. I just have opinions. And it's like, I'm a Jewish person. Of course I'm gonna have opinions. It's like physical impossibility. But I love like Assassins. That's from Sondheim. Carolina Change. I am obsessed with. I saw it last time it was on Broadway, and I'm so thankful because it closed, which is like a sin. Because it was amazing. And it's just it really shows how the form of the American musical can really capture a lot of really nuanced, difficult topics. So for those that are not familiar, Carolina Change follows a year basically. And there's a family in the deep south of Louisiana, and they're Jewish, and they have a black maid, and this is during civil rights, and that's all going on behind everything. And it's just in every interaction and the sort of like the weirdness of the American Jewish experience of being like, we're white, but we don't feel like we're with the white people, but they're definitely not black. And all the like, there's, you know, like there's a character like who's the grandfather who is like this huge labor activist. And like when he gives his kid money for Hanukkah, he says like, and remember this money was, you know, stolen from another man's mouth, like very intense. And it just so beautifully captures these very real dynamics that exist today in the United States. And I think that's part of why it's not been as popular, because it's not just happy. Like there's a lot going on. There's a lot of symbolism. There's a lot of like the moon sings at one point, or like the bus is an actual character, you know, and it's brilliant. I love it.
And as we close this episode, just wanted to thank you all for listening to the podcast whenever you're listening to the podcast. And to those who also subscribe, download, and share the podcast, we encourage you to continue to do just that. And again, thank you for being a supporter and listener of VHC. And also a big, big thank you to Vega Harash for joining in on the podcast and sharing her story and awesome great gems about the amazing Sacred Harp music, as well as her musical experience. And we encourage you to please check out her podcast, The D-Listers of History. Check it out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the streaming platforms. So please be a support to this amazing podcast as well. And coming up in next week's show, another All Things Music with Catherine Gerard, who's an up-and-coming singer-musician who also has a great story to share. And you can tune in to the podcast on Spotify as well as Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, and all other podcasts available. You can reach out to me via email, kevwash46@yahoo.com. Also on social media, on Instagram at kevin_washington_887. I'm also on Threads, so you check me out there as well. Also, check out VHC's website, kevwash46.wixsite.com/VHCP. And we are now have developed a Patreon account. So you want to check Kevin Washington VHC on Patreon and be of support to the podcast there. VHC is also on Facebook and YouTube. And you can also find yours truly on LinkedIn. This is your host, Kevin Washington. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.